This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Glasser, president of Pano, joins us, and he has a request that I thought was absolutely worthy of bringing him on the show, because so many people have helped not only NOPD, JPSO, and others from other areas of the country when we were down and out as it relates to hurricane recovery. It's now our turn and our time to return the favor. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil, and I appreciate this opportunity.
So you guys have got together, and y'all are collecting supplies for folks in Asheville, North Carolina, and possibly northern Florida through the Panhandle as well. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're partnering with Slide LPD and local businesses and, of course, our citizens, and requesting that the public help, if they're willing to, by providing us with the donation supplies that we will transport up to the Asheville area and possibly to Florida, most likely to Florida, after this storm comes through. We have two locations, one on the North Shore and one on the South Shore. North Shore location is going to be Mike Bruno's North Shore Harley-Davidson. They're accepting donations between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. And on the South Shore, we have our own SOD, or Special Operations Division Complex, at 1899 Chapatula Street, right behind the Walmart at Felicity and Chapatula Street. And if you can drop off things over there, you know, the kind of things that we typically need during the storm. Anybody that's been through Katrina knows what we're looking for.
Well, let's just go through it. Water, Gatorade, non-perishable food, socks, T-shirts, underwear, hygiene supplies of all kinds, Neosporin, you know, antiseptics, Band-Aids, gauze tape, aspirin, Tylenol, Advil, toothbrushes, toothpaste, soap, deodorant, shampoo, and baby stuff for certain with children. And all the donated items should be in new or unopened condition, right?
Exactly right. And thanks for going through that list for me. Those are the things, because we'll turn down pretty much nothing, because we're certain that the victims up there are going to be lacking just about everything. Those are the main things we'll definitely, without a doubt, need. But, you know, we'll take pretty much anything that's in a new or unused condition. We'll take it all, and we're going to be bringing it up there. We're also taking donations via Venmo. You can contact, to go through the app and contact us through Police Association of New Orleans, spelled out, not Pano, P-A-N-O, but Police Association of New Orleans. And donate cash, and I can assure everyone that whatever is collected will go directly to 100% to the victims. There's no overhead or expenses that we'll be taking out of that. That's something that Pano will be dealing with on our own. So 100% of anything that's donated will go directly to the victims.
And if anybody has any questions or you know, want to make special arrangements, they can contact you guys at 504-942-2454, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and we're online, so it's easy for us. If you don't remember the number, or you didn't write it down, it's easy to look up on the internet.
Mike, I know that you have a network of guys that you know in the law enforcement business around the country. Have you been in contact with anyone there in North Carolina?
Actually, I have. I've talked to the chief and the deputy chief in Asheville. They're hurting bad up there, and of course they were completely and utterly unprepared for this kind of event. You know, down here, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, we get these hurricanes, we get these storms occasionally, so we kind of have a clue what's going on. They were not expecting this in that mountain region, and they are caught completely, completely off guard on this. So they are in need of everything, and so we've been in touch with them. They've told us what some of the things that we know they need, and we know offhand that even if they don't, we know what they're going to need. So we're bringing it up there. But they're expecting us, and as soon as we get everything together, we'll be rolling up there.
Michael, it's kind of interesting watching that rapid water and the attempts at rescues and stuff. And if you don't go through that training, as you well know, in urban search and rescue, otherwise known as USAR, I mean, you really are behind the eight ball in the immediate aftermath of the storm and even during dependency of the storm. And there's really not a lot you can do, right?
Oh, especially there. They've never had this sort of thing before. You know, you're in the mountains, you're not expecting a flood, and they were completely unprepared for this, and they are completely devastated. It looks every bit as bad as Katrina was here, and it's sad. It's very, very sad, and they're completely unprepared for doing any of these things. You know, we at least know and anticipate in advance. We've gone through this before. They have not. So this is brand new to them, and you know how FEMA is and the government. They're a day late and a dollar short. So we're going up there to give them a hand.
And that's what you hear when you watch the news reports. You know, nobody really wants to be critical of FEMA, but what they're saying is that it's their own folks within their own community and those that are given to those folks within the community that are making all the difference in the world for them right now. So that just highlights the importance of the ask that you're making at this point in time, because really that's their only source of gaining access to these goods.
You know, Noel, looking back at Katrina, when we were waiting for assistance here, and I can tell you, the first three police departments that showed up to help us was the California Highway Patrol, the NYPD, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I remember
that. How much further away do you think they could be? But those are the three agencies that showed up first with supplies for us.
You know, NYPD, I ended up staying in contact with a bunch of those folks, and some of the folks that worked for me stayed in contact with them for much longer. A lot of friendships developed as a result of that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we still talk to people from some of the places in Texas that came here. And yeah, absolutely, because those things, they stay with you.
Yeah, in fact, I remember visiting one of the deputy chiefs with NYPD many, many years after the storm. We had dinner together. I was up in New York, and he said he still had he saw things that he didn't think he'd ever see in his career. And, you know, and he looked at me and goes, you know, Newell, it's pretty crazy up here in New York, right? We see a lot of things that y'all are never going to see. I said, that's true. He goes, but let me tell you, that event really changed a lot of our thought process and our mentality about preparation for whether it's terrorist-related events or otherwise. He goes, it moved us in so many different ways, and we're better for it, quite frankly, is what he said.
Well, you know, I started my career with NYPD a long, long time ago, and the same thing came up many times in our conversations after the fact in various conferences and places I've gone and discussed Katrina. And while a lot of places have events that are catastrophic, they usually aren't regional. They're, you know, limited to a certain area within the city, a building or a certain small area. And the rest of the city or the rest of the area functions, and people can come in from outside, and the first responders can go back home and swap out to other people. This was a little different because it was regionally. The entire metro area was completely out, and there was nobody to come in except those that came in way from the outside. And that's what's happening in Asheville right now. That's a regional issue. It's not just a local event. It's regional, and they're depending on people like us to come up there.
You know, and once the water drained here, right, we were able to get around. I mean, we had some major thoroughfares like the Twin Span in the east, the Causeway Bridge, some damages along the I-10 corridor. But we were still able to get around. A lot of our infrastructure, roadway, I should say, wasn't, you know, washed away. Up there, you have people completely isolated. They can't get out of their neighborhoods because there are no roadways. I mean, there's no road, period. No bridge.
No, and there's not a lot of boats up there, you know. It's not like they had the Cajun Navy. You know, they, like I said, when I say they're unprepared, I mean it in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah. So let's give them that Venmo again. And
okay, the Venmo is just go into the Venmo app and type in Police Association of New Orleans, and it'll walk you through. But you have to spell it out. If you go to, if you use Pano, it won't register. So just spell it out. And if you have any problems, if there's any questions, any glitches, or anything doesn't work out, just give us a call at 504-942-2454, and we'll facilitate your donation.
The two drop-off points, folks, Mike Bruno's North Shore Harley-Davidson, located at 791 I-10 Service Road in Slidell between the hours of 10 a.m. and 7 p.m., as well as the NOPD Special Operations Division warehouse at 1899 Chapatula Street by the Walmart. You can come in off Felicity and Religious Street. On the back of the building is the entrance between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. So, folks, let's get a good turnout. Let's get those goods out there. So Michael Glasser and the members of Pano can make their way to Asheville and pay back to them what they provided for us in their time of need. We would really appreciate it. Michael Glasser, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this with us. We appreciate it.
And thank you, Newell, for this opportunity to get that out there. It's a big help. Thank you.
All righty, sir. Michael Glasser, president of Pano. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We'll go to the talk lines. We want to hear from you about anything that you want to talk about. So give us a shout. We'll be right back. Across an article that's really interesting, and you scratch your head and you wonder what happened and why. And you search for the answer, and it doesn't seem to be many apparent answers to the situation. And the story goes this way. The Atlantic magazine, their November cover story, is entitled "The Elite College Students Who Can't Read Books." It's a chronicle of a generational wreckage where students no longer arrive at college, even the highly selective elite ones, prepared to actually read books. And the author reports that it's not that they don't want to do the reading, it's just that they don't know how. Interestingly, there was some data that was provided in 1976. That's actually the year that I graduated from Jesuit High School. 40% of high school seniors said that they had read at least six books for fun in the previous year, compared with 11.5% who hadn't read any. By 2022, those numbers flipped. So only 11% of students have read at least six books for fun in the previous year. And 40% hadn't read any. And it was interesting that this now, as some other authors that have written about this article, said that reading for pleasure is seen as kind of a niche interest. A couple of professors had told this one author that their students see reading books as akin to listening to vinyl records, something that a small subculture may still enjoy, but that's mostly a relic, as he points out, of an earlier time. And they can't point to any cause or trend that's behind this. And it's kind of interesting. And we wonder why we are faced with the issues that we had. Just yesterday, we talked about whether or not there's really the necessity for the Federal Department of Education. And I talked about the fact that we have this complete failure in reading. It seems like we're all wrapped up in all of this ideological nonsense that we're trying to force people and force feed and get them to swallow instead of just focusing on the fundamentals. And you keep coming across these observations in these articles about the failures that we have in education, and we wonder why. You know, this author points out that, you know, students headed to these elite colleges, you know, there's ferocious competition to get in. It's driven by a sense that long-term success is impossible, like without an Ivy League degree. It promotes GPA obsession. Students, you know, they don't go through the regime of extracurricular activities, and some do in a different way to compose a resume that can survive the eye of these admission folks around the country. And there's a lot of these different observations. And one author says, and then there are phones. And, you know, it causes you to reflect a little bit. A lot of people read snippets, right? They read the headlines, they read the snippets, and then they want to go talk about it as though they're an expert on this. And you see the same thing in the media over and over and over again. And news cycles change so fast that what is reported at 11 p.m. may not be the truth at 7 a.m. It's one of the reasons why I'm always on the screen. And I'm always double-checking my research from the previous evening, you know, as it relates to this. And I just remember that, when we were growing up, reading was supposed to be fun. You know, one of my kids loved to read. In fact, probably would read somewhere between 60 and 75 books a school year. In addition to what the schoolwork required. And it was always refreshing to me to watch the joy in her face as she actually read books and talked about it. And she had this voracious appetite, couldn't wait to get to the next book in many respects. She had heard, you know, or read something about it, and it piqued her interest, and she wanted to go there. And still to this day, at 28 years of age, and is involved in a very rigorous educational opportunity that she's experiencing at the present time, still reading for fun. But has a vocabulary, you know, second to none. And these things just don't happen by accident. They happen because you're putting the time in. And you have to wonder, what are we telling our young kids, and what are schools' expectations of folks? And it would seem to me that we would start off in school forgetting about a lot of the other stuff that is so much easier, you know, to gain when you're more mature, like spelling. You know, I mean, I remember going through the flashcards for spelling with my kids all the time. And I'm like, this just doesn't seem like a very fruitful activity. Just let them spell phonetically. They'll get it at the end of the day. With the advent of spell check, I mean, come on, really? And it would just seem to me that maybe if we read, and maybe if we journaled with that, right, and just spell phonetically and not get all caught up in all of these other exercises, we'd be much better served. But how hard is it to believe that students that are attending the elite colleges and universities today have no desire to read a book in addition to what's being presented? I don't know about you, but it seems to me we've lost something and we're less than. Would love to hear from you. 504-260-1870. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. On the text line, reading books for pleasure is niche. What the? Well, I can't say that. It's no wonder why younger people today are so dense and verbally inept. I'm 60 and I'm always reading a book, nonfiction, mainly history and biographies. I just finished a bio on the Marquis de Lafayette. Coming now, I have a U.S. 1927 first edition. It's quite the collector's item of T.E. Lawrence's book that was the basis for Lawrence of Arabia and a History of Louisiana during the War of 1812. Let's go to Rick out in Slidell. He's on the talk line. Rick, what say you?
Well, hi, Sheriff. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I remember in elementary school, it was such an honor or a privilege and a rite of passage. Our class got brought to the school library and got to pick out anything we wanted to read. And I'll never forget, the first book I read was called The Say Hey Kid. It was the autobiography of Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm.
That got me reading. I'm 73 years old now, and I go at least once a week to the library, and I check out three books. And I read them. I love the smell of a real book. I love to hold that real book. I don't want to read it on my phone or my computer. It's such a privilege to be able to read. So I'm agreeing with you, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Why do you, any thought you have about why we find ourselves in this position today?
Well, you and I didn't have cell phones and we didn't have computers.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, they could read a book, you know, without holding it now. It's a whole different world. I'm not blaming the younger kids, but I agree with you. They're really missing out because my imagination just goes with whatever book I'm reading. You know, it could be an autobiography. It could be anything in the world. And that gives me an escape, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It helps my imagination. It helps me grow.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I don't know, Rick, if you remember, I got a text here. Remember the weekly readers in the early 70s? And the back pages had ads. I remember that. I couldn't remember the name, and someone just texted it in. I was going through the process of trying to remember it, but I remember them vividly, right?
Yeah, weekly readers. And I was a scout. I was an Eagle Scout, so I always had Boys Life to read, that magazine. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know about
it. Absolutely. You know?
No. But reading was always encouraged in my family, and thank goodness, because now I'm a widower. And so instead of having my wife to talk to, I have books to delve into. And so it's something that was programmed or taught to me at an early age. And what's nice is 70 years later, 60 years later, more 65, okay, it's still hanging true. My world, when I read, my world is bigger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no what doubt. Books give me.
Got another text here, Rick. You'll remember this. Remember the old bookmobiles?
Well, I lived in a little small town north of Dallas. Now it's a suburb, but back then it was 20 miles of prairie between the little town of Richardson and Dallas, okay? Now it's whatever. But we couldn't wait. There were two trucks that we were always waiting for, the bookmobile and the popsicle truck.
There you go. Preferably the popsicle truck first, right?
Well, all the kids came out for the popsicle trucks. Some of us came out for the bookmobile. But do you remember popsicle trucks?
Oh, yeah. And I much prefer the popsicles over reading. I'll make that admission.
I get you. I agree. But there's one thing about that popsicle truck that made me decide on my career choice. And I had a good career. I decided there was no way in the world I could ever be a popsicle salesman and listen to that same little 4-beat song all day. There's got to be another way to make a living.
Yeah, once was enough, felt, for sure.
I felt so sorry for that guy. Yeah. I mean, we love hearing him coming, and you know, and back then for about 8 cents or a dime, you could buy a popsicle.
Absolutely.
Gosh knows what a popsicle costs today. But
well, Rick. Got to move on. Thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate you sharing that story with us, and keep up the great reading, my friend. Let's go to Pete in Wisconsin. Pete, what say you?
Oh, hey, Newell, how are you? I just was listening to your interview with the governor, and they were talking about the funding of schools. And I just got back from Milwaukee and Chicago, and I thought I would just share what I heard. One is that the state of Wisconsin, the governor is a former educator, and they have a bill that's going to be voted on in November for raising $600 million for the state of Wisconsin for the entire school system. And that's being pushed through the governor in Madison. And what they found was is that a journalist with a business publication went out and talked to the school systems about their operating budgets. And he just reported back and found that less than 10% of the school systems in the state of Wisconsin have an operating budget. Most of them don't really even know what an operating budget is.
Wow.
And so when they were talking about what they required to basically, you know, generate so much money from the taxpayers, they really couldn't define what they really needed. And it was pretty incredible. They sent the PowerPoint from the state capitol as far as what they were trying to, you know, reason for that. They showed financial reviews, et cetera. But as far as an actual operating budget, how much money do they need for computers? How much money do they need for books? How much money do they need to snowplow the parking lots in the wintertime? You know, everything that takes place, you know, athletic fields, et cetera, they didn't have an operating budget to explain what they needed the money for. And I just wonder how much of that is happening, not only in the state of Louisiana, but all over the United States.
Well, it's not happening in the state of Louisiana, I can tell you, because the rules for them are the same rules that governed the operations of the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office. I was a chief financial officer there. There are very strict requirements as to the adoption of a budget, when you adopt a budget, public hearings on your budget, specific items that you must have budgeted. If there's a material change, there's a percentage that if you reach that threshold, you have to you're compelled to change your budget. At that point in time, and account for that financial anomaly as it occurs. So I could promise you that does not happen in Louisiana. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not spending money on things that we shouldn't be spending money on, right? But as it relates to public reporting, and a lot of the school boards in the state get special GFOA recognition, Government Finance Officers Association recognition, which was a goal that I had set for our department in reporting. And I'm proud to say that our team, because it wasn't me, it was our team's work, that we got that special designation for 17, 18, 19 years of running, and they still may be getting that designation. I'm not sure, but it's something that we took very seriously.
Well, the other thing I'll add is that I just flew out of Midway two nights ago, and I was listening to Chicago radio, WGN, the local station there, and they talked about the mayor of the city of Chicago. Big debate, big argument with the school board for the city of Chicago. It got so intense that the school board, every single member of the school board resigned and walked out. And
replaced by the mayor. Actually, they resigned. The mayor was going to replace him. It's a big battle right now up there because the mayor there has given in to the union. And, you know, and the concessions made to the union, the school board saying, we can't afford this. Where's the money going to come from? It doesn't work.
Well, do you know who he replaced the school board with? Did you hear?
No.
He replaced it mainly with political action committee people from the various locations throughout the city of Chicago. But they are political activists. They are not educators.
Well, there's no surprise there because he's a complete total ideologue and, you know, rules that way and governs that way. And that's why Chicago is upside down in so many different ways as it relates to governance and government there. It's going to be interesting to see every we just came off the heels of a horrible mayor up there. Now it seems as though we got another one going down that same path. Pete, got to get to a break. Thank you so much for the call. Safe travels to you. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. On a text line, Mr. Newell, wonderful commentary on the love of reading and writing and building vocabulary. We have lost the ability to articulate our thoughts, our emotions, our truths precisely and accurately. Couldn't have said it any better myself. One of the authors that wrote about this article in The Atlantic said the following, that children come home to parents who spend a lot of their leisure time responding to after-hour emails, scrolling their phones, watching television. We prioritize what we see being prioritized. And in their own leisure, what little they have after clubs, practices, rehearsals, volunteering, tutoring, and the rest, it is easily co-opted by the distractions and addictions of TikTok and YouTube. Interesting observation. We are joined by Scoot. He's headed your way. Scoot, what do we have coming up?
Wait, I'm looking at my phone at some TikTok. No, you're actually right about that. You know, I learned years ago that there's a different process that takes place in the brain when you read something as opposed to when you see it or hear it. And as powerful as those things can be, when you read something, there's a definite reaction in your brain that's different. So it really is very, very important to actually read.
Do you still read?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yep,
Nonfiction, fiction?
Nonfiction. I have a very boring life. I don't read fiction. I wish I did. It would be a great escape for me. I admire those people who can get into a book and it's total fiction. But I tend to be sort of, work oriented to the point where I read books that relate to my job. I read books that relate to my life. And one of the best books that I've read recently is a book called You're a Badass. And it really is a great book about how sometimes we get in our way of being as great as we can be. And there are a number of books along this this line, but, you know, we sometimes tend to be so critical of ourselves and judge ourselves in such a way that we prevent ourselves from being as great as we can be. And the book You're a Badass was really all about that. I really enjoyed it.
I'm exactly the same way. I can't read a fiction.
Yeah,
I can't. I don't know why. It's all nonfiction. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Okay, well, we'll talk about the campaign. You know, I know a lot of people are saying, I can't wait till it's over. Well, just wait till it's over. You think this is going to end now? You just wait till it's over. I don't care how it comes out, but there's going to be a lot to talk about after it is over. So we'll get into some of that. And who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Saints?
All right, Scoot's headed your way. Stay tuned. Hope you have a great evening. We'll be